Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
Obviously, if it's a dead low, now you see all the structures you have over there. And that will be the best thing you can do. You go over there, spend some time, and then you wait. You wait until the tide start to coming in again. And then you see the way the tide, you know, works in. And then you will figure out where and the fish might be. And that's your homework. Is nothing better than that you can do. Go on a dead low tide and scout the area.
That was Enrico Puglisi with a great tip for your next saltwater trip. EP fibers and stripers today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the Fly Fishing Show. Make sure you click the subscribe button in your app of choice if you get a chance, so you get updated when that next podcast episode drops. Enrico Puglisi is here to share the story of creating EP fibers and a career in fly fishing and fly tying. We find out how and where to go for stripers on Long Island, where the best saltwater resource is, and which brands of cigars you must find, you must track down and try. Enrico shares his favorite today. Before we get started, let's hear from our sponsors. Angler's Coffee roasts a full range of coffees with one goal in mind, delivering excellent coffee to every single angler. And I'm one of those anglers who's been loving Angler's Coffee. Great tasting, robust, and good to go. They just released a new subscription program, and you can get 20% off this box and all products at anglerscoffee.com. Just use the coupon code WETFLYSWING at checkout to get 20% off of great coffee today. That's anglerscoffee.com. OPST's rods represent decades of dedication to sustained anchor two-handed casting. A rod reflects its designer, and these rods are a true illustration of Skagit Master Ed Ward's vision. The Micro Series, from 3 to 5 weight, comes exceptionally close to single-handed specs and is proving to be a unique tool for trout and smallmouth anglers. Head over to wetflyswing.com/OPST to check out the lineup right now. That's wetflyswing.com/OPST. So without further ado, here's Enrico Puglisi from epflies.com. This is Dave from wetflyswing.com, and I'm happy to introduce Enrico Puglisi today from epflies.com. How's it going, Enrico?
It's doing great. Thank you. How about yourself?
Good, good. I kind of mangled your name a little bit there. Can you pronounce it for me again?
Sure, no problem. It's kind of difficult, but, you know, everyone should do the best they can. It's Enrico Puglisi.
There you go. Perfect. All right. So we got that for the record. we're going to dig into you. You know, we were just talking too about, you know, where I first heard about you. And I can't remember. I mean, your name's kind of all over the place out there. You've got the EP fiber and all the fly tying stuff. We're going to dig into all that today and maybe even a focus on some striped bass fishing. But before we get there, talk about how you first got into fly fishing, how that all came to be.
It started when back home, you know, where I'm coming from, you know, Sicily is my native country. And I used to go fishing with my father at early age, 4 or 5 years old. And I always been fishing mainly in salt water because, you know, I used to live very close to the salt water. And my father, you know, told me all the little tricks, you know, to catch fish, of course, and not only for the fun of it, and but also you know to put some food on the table. You know, those days that's what we used to do. It you take from nature, you know, rather if it's from the water, you know, fishing, or from the land, and you know, and the river, and so forth and so on. So the fishing was always there. So then, 1980, when I came in the United States and established myself over here, several years later, 4 or 5 years later, I discovered fly fishing, and to me, it was a really intricate. And you know, I took that as a challenge. Yeah, to me, you know, catching fish, you just put a couple of feathers on in a hook and fool those fish. You know, it was a really intricate. So, and that's pretty much how I got started in the fly fishing.
That's it. So mid '80s, you got started. And what brought you over to the U.S. Initially? Why did you decide to come this way?
Well, I met Karen, my wife, and to make a long story short, here I am.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Yeah, gotcha.
Because if I didn't meet my wife back those days, I would not be here in the United States, of course. I mean, my profession was a chef. So I was basically, you know, working all over Italy and Europe as well. So that wasn't my profession. So I had the opportunity to go pretty much everywhere, but never thought about the United States. And then it's one of those things, you know, you meet your bride, and here I am.
Yeah, there you go. And you guys never thought about maybe Karen just sticking in Sicily and then kind of doing the thing?
Yes, absolutely. We thought that, and you know, to be there, and but you know, it's one of those things. And then coming over here for me was, you know, discovering the new world, let's put it this way. And I say, okay, you know, I'm going to give him a shot and see if I like it. And if not, we go back in Italy or we go elsewhere. You know?
There you go.
That's how that happened.
And it sounds like it. You liked it. It's funny because we talk about with my family, we talk about traveling and talking about, and actually Italy, you know, and Europe and things like that comes up saying, well, gosh, we could probably live over there. It'd be fun to live over there for a little while. What do you think is, I mean, I'm not sure how long it's been since you've been there, but what makes that area where you grew up so unique or so special?
Well, you know, Sicily, as everybody knows, is an island, you know, and it's a very, I mean, it's around the middle of the Mediterranean, and we got invaded pretty much by everyone out there. Mm. I mean, you know, included the Americans. So we kept through centuries all the culture, you know, from, from the Turkish, you know, to the Africans and to the Greek and to the Spanish and to, I mean, you name it. So we, you know, having that culture that you cultivated and you keep it for, you know, century and century and century. So it makes the island a little bit, I would say,
diverse.
Unique.
Yeah,
and diverse, of course, because we have, you know, we have a little bit of all the other, you know, countries that's surrounding us. So, and that's what Sicily is. And and being on the Mediterranean, of course, you know, we have that kind of advantage of the good weather, even if it's in the winter time. Mm. And that's what, you know, that what makes Sicily, you know, very versatile, because, you know, you can live on the coastline, you can go up on the mound, and that's pretty much,
that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
And now you're in, are you in New York now?
Yes, I'm here in the same town when I first landed in this country, and I basically never moved out of this town. And
the weather, I guess the weather in New York isn't quite the same as the Mediterranean, right? But I guess you like it.
No, it isn't. It isn't. But, you know, fortunately enough, you know, I travel a lot, and me and my family, you know, every year, pretty much, except this past year, you know, we go back in Italy and, you know, and elsewhere.
Yeah.
So we are pretty lucky to have this
That's right. Cool. Well, and what is it? You know, I just want to start us off here on the fishing side. So as far as your home water, when somebody asks you, what is your home water? What is that water?
Well, it's the Long Island Sound. I live on the North Shore of the, you know, basically, it's the tri-state area, and I live in Queens. So we cover the North Shore. So we have the stripers, the bluefish, pretty much, and I can even walk into my own backyards when it's a striper season starts, which now, actually, I believe it, you know, few fish that might be out there. It's been quite nice the past 2 weeks. So and that would really make, you know, easy for me. And, you know, interesting enough, when I started fly fishing, I started for trout, you know, fishing the Long Island. We have a couple of rivers in Long Island, then obviously the more famous Catskill area. And then after that, what was that? Probably 88, 89, when I discovered the Long Island Sound for stripers, bluefish and wickfish as well. And that's how I get started promoting salt water. But originally, I did start, you know, trout fishing, believe it or not.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay. And you still have some trout flies and things like that over at
the absolutely. Now we have this brand new line of trout dry flies for the time being. And I'm already working on the nymphs and the streamers, incorporating 100% the EP fibers and blended fibers. It's been extremely successful for us on the dry flies for the past 3 years now, and people more and more, they're learning about this trigger point that we offered, and they've been just, you know, love it. I mean, it kind of opened a new frontier on dry flies. So and we're very happy about that.
Oh, nice. Well, and I wanted to just take it, you know, we mentioned stripers. So in that area, I mean, how is striper fishing? Is it pretty good, or how are things looking now?
Well, you know, these days, obviously, it's not what it used to be on, you know, on the early 90s and the mid 90s and so forth and so on. It's been up and down. But overall, it is good. You know, in my area, we don't see that many of those big fish the way we used to. But we do, you know, plenty of schoolies. And, you know, we having fun. You know, the fish are there. And we hope that we're going to see more and more. We haven't seen that many of bluefish around the way it used to be those days as well. But I'm very confident that we'll come back.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, I think we'll have time today to dig into a little bit more on the striper fishing and that, mm-hmm. you know, that side. But I just want to start off, you know, obviously the flies, that's something I think you're known for. And, you know, like we said, the EP fiber stuff. But maybe we just focus on with the saltwater patterns and we can think about striper flies or whatever, or just saltwater flies in general. But what to you makes a good saltwater pattern? You know, when somebody's tying a saltwater pattern, they're going on a trip, whether it's for stripers or bonefish. I mean, are there some general things you could say that you should do for all those saltwater patterns?
The general things that I would say to everyone, rather you tie your own flies or you buy the flies, you know, for your trips or whatever this situation dictated, is to buy the flies that it will look good to the species you are targeting. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, people buy the flies that look good, you know,
yeah,
to themselves. But that is not the case, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that means, you know, you need to know more about the species that you are going fishing for. And today we have the advantage, you know, to gathering information pretty much for any species that we'll be fishing. So my suggestion to everyone is that doesn't matter where you are going fishing is, do your homework and see what the patterns, you know, generally they are suggested for that.
Yeah.
And then you go and you're scouting around and again, look at the flies that it will appeal to the fish and not to the fishermen.
What would be the, for if we just keep it on the stripers, what would be a good pattern or some good, a couple of patterns for striper fishing?
You mean in general?
Well, I guess if you have to say, I don't know if you have your own patterns or what. I mean, I was thinking, you know, recently we have a actually a Lefty Cray episode coming up here. I'm doing a little celebration for Lefty, and I learned a lot about his life, which was really interesting, obviously. So you got the Deceiver, you got some of these other, right, some of these popular ones. Are there other flies that either you have or other ones that are out there that people should be thinking about?
Well, look, you know, we all started, you know, in even including myself, when I started like anybody else, you know, tying Deceivers and Clouses. Mm-hmm. And this lab site from Lou Tubbery, we all started that way. So, and today's those, you know, of course, those flies, they're still going strong. There's no question about that. But, you know, in my case, obviously, I do use at this point, you know, the any flies made with the EP fibers or yeah. any other materials. So to me, the fly to go basically is the peanut butter style flies, you know, and then, of course, the various colors. To me, that is the flies that I fish the most, not only for stripers, but pretty much for almost anything, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you're targeting striped bass and you do have a, you know, peanut butter style flies, yeah. then you cannot go wrong with that.
And describe, just for somebody who's a total new to, you know, kind of what you have going, what are the peanut butter style flies?
Well, the peanut butter style flies are resembling the, you know, the bunker patterns when it's a juvenile. So they are a wide profile bait fish. So you want to imitate the fly that he has the wide profiles. And usually, you know, they starting about, you know, inch and a half, 2 inch to 3-4 inches. That's pretty much the size that everybody, you know, fish with it these days.
Yeah.
And then when he's on the adult stage, you know, about 12 or 15 inch, and then it's become to be a big fly. So it's not really that popular fishing with that big size of a peanut butter. You know, that's the reality. You know, we fishing with that 3 to 4 or 5 inch style peanut bunker, then you're good. You can manage with the 9 weight, 8 weight, and so forth and so on. So you keep that in mind. In Long Island Sound, you know, your best bet is creating the silhouette of wide profile body flies.
Let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. OPST's rods represent decades of dedication to sustained anchor two-handed casting. A rod reflects its designer, and these rods are a true illustration of Skagit Master Ed Ward's vision. The Pure Skagit series falls right in line with OPST's principles, a short, medium, fast-action rod that sports an extra sensitive tip, all while maintaining a powerful lower section that's true and sure to leave you impressed by its feather-launching potential. And I've been using this rod for steelhead lately and been blown away by its lightweight and the power it packs. You almost don't realize it's in your hand. It's seriously, it's like it's ultralight. So that was, you know, thinking about how to describe this thing, I think that's the word that comes back to me. I was casting some big flies for steelhead with a sink tip and a bunch of wind, and I didn't have a problem at all, even with my less than perfect casting technique. So I've been impressed with the 11-foot 7-weight, but there is a huge line. They have three different rods in the lineup, from 6 to 9 weights, and from 10-foot 8-inch all the way up to 12-foot 3-inch, which pretty much, for me, covers it all. So I'm excited to dig into more of this. Targeted towards fishing large trout and up to Canadian and Alaskan king salmon, this series should cover all the bases when targeting those larger fish. Head over to wetflyswing.com/OPST to check out the lineup right now. That's wetflyswing.com/OPST. Okay, back to the show. Okay, and if you were going out today for, say, stripers again, you could take any of those patterns. What would you grab if you had to grab one fly today?
Well, today, in the beginning of the season, you know, those fish, the water's still cold. And those fish, they're not really that active. So you want an attracting pattern, you know, color wise. So mainly my suggestion goes to anyone and myself too, of course, using like a white chartreuse, a white, a yellow with a little bit extra flash on it. And when you're retrieving the flies, you know, don't you slow down because again, those fish, they're not really that active. The water is cold. So it's not necessary to give a fast retrieving, stripping, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So you slow down and perhaps, you know, you're fishing in 3-4 feet of water just to use a floating line with, I would say, probably around 5-6 feet long leader. That's plenty. And then you're right on the money.
That's it. Cool. Yeah. And so I did want to touch more, you know, as we have time a little bit on the striper fishing. I get a lot of questions, and even out here, you know, we're on the other side of the country, you know, in California, we got a lot of people that love stripers down there. So I'm not sure, you know, how much overlap there is. I'm sure there's quite a bit, but I did want to touch on the EP fibers. Can you, again, to somebody who's totally new that hasn't heard of them, can you describe how that came to be and what those are all about? The brushes and everything you have going?
Well, yeah, I mean, when I started in those days back in the late 80s, there wasn't a really synthetic materials. The EP fibers was not existing. The only synthetic material was available those days were the Ultra Air by H.D. Thompson and some fish air. But basically, those two synthetic fibers that were made mainly, you know, to do jigs. So I used what it was available. And then, of course, those fibers have been just, you know, a little bit too stiff, and you could not really create the wide profile fly. I mean, even if you could, the flies didn't have the movement that I was looking for. So that's when I put myself, you know, in that position, say, okay, you know, I need to find the alternative to the feathers and marabou because those days, and not only we had a plenty of striped bass, but we had a plenty of bluefish. So the bluefish were mixed with the striper and vice versa. So basically, you know, when you hook a bluefish, it's one fish, one fly. And there was, you know, you can imagine, you know, a fly done with feathers and bucktail is totally destroyed.
Yeah.
So there have to be a better way over here. I mean, you know, it takes me 15, 20 minutes to do a fly, and then one fish, one fly, that's not really working for me. And besides, you cannot really create the bunker type of flies with the wide profile. It's very difficult to do that. So I combine those you know, two situations. I need a material that doesn't get destroyed, and also I need a material that allow me to create the silhouette and the colors I needed. So, and then, you know, it's one of those things. You go across the materials, and then you see immediately what the materials will do for you. And that's pretty much how, you know, it started. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the beginning, of course, it was trial and error. Experimenting this, experimenting that, and put less, put more.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like a journey for me. You know, it didn't happen in one day, you know. And then, of course, find the right colors. It wasn't the colors of what they were not there, what you were looking for. So you have to work with the manufacturing on those fibers. I mean, it was a really long process.
Yeah, gotcha. And now, and on the brushes, so we're talking, what is this, like mid-90s or something like that when you're kind of digging into all this stuff?
The brushes came up on the mid-90s, and then the brushes, when I started, was a combination of the fibers with some, you know, the sparkling flash into it, and then, you know, right after the EP fibers, I came out with the silky fiber, which is a much thinner diameter than the regular EP fiber. So blending the two the two fibers together and some flash. And that's when the brochure pretty much started. And that was really a big jump to the regular fibers into the brochures, which the brochures really catch the time in an F if you incorporate the brush and the fibers at the same time. But today, you know, with all the variation on the brushes that I started in the mid-90s, pretty much you can use one brush of one colors and you can create a one little bunker pattern. And then with some, you know, permanent marker, waterproof markers, you give the coloration to the brush and then there you have it. You put a little eyes and then there you have it. You know what I mean? And so it's a big, and, you know, plenty people out there, they really, you know, appreciate the fact that these brushes are available on their arsenal.
Yep. Okay. And that's the big advantage. One of the big advantages of the brushes is that it improves your time. Instead of spending 20 minutes on a fly, you can zip one out pretty quick.
Absolutely. You know, look, you know, in the beginning and until today, I mean, the peanut butter style flies, the technique hasn't changed too much. The main complaining about the peanut butter was not that the flies was not catching fish and not that the flies got destroyed, you know, with the bluefish. It wasn't at that. The main complaint was that it was a two-time consuming. And basically, you know, right from the beginning, I say, people, you want something good, then you're going to have to, you know, work on it. And it's a matter of practicing. And if you can do, you know, spend the 15 minutes to tie a clouser, you can spend the 15 minutes to tie a peanut bunker. So pretty much you're on the same level. But the fly, you know, tying that fly with EP fibers, definitely the advantage is to create the silhouette you want it and the durability of the fly. So that's the difference.
That's it. Okay. And that peanut butter style fly, you could pretty much fish that for a number of different species in the saltwater?
That's correct. That's correct. In fact, you know, it started over here in Little Neck Bay into the Sound. And then a couple of years later, I discovered that they were using the same fly for tarpon fishing down in Florida. And that's when when everything pretty much happens, you know what I mean?
Gotcha. Okay, perfect. So that clarifies it. So basically, again, going back to stripers, if we were going out today let's take it to the peak season. When is the best time? If you had to pick one time to fish for stripers out in your neck of the woods, when would you be going?
Well, in our area, it will be starting pretty much April, May, and June, you know, first part of June. And then in the summer months, it's going to be too hot. The weather is a little bit too hot as well. So summertime is kind of iffy, unless you're fishing at night. And then come back into the fall in September, October, November. Those are the months, the peak for us.
Okay. So if you're heading out there in April, or if it was April, May, June, you would be grabbing. What fly would you be grabbing, or what couple of flies?
It will be the peanut bunker, of course, and the colors I will generally use is three colors, but it will be the black and purple, gray and white, chartreuse and white. Those are the three colors. And then as we progress into the season, I will have a mullet type of patterns because that's, you know, getting ready for in the fall when you have those mullet run into the South Shore and then you see those mullet run and definitely stripers chasing those mullet as well. So those are pretty much the two patterns you look into it.
Okay. All right. And are people out there, I'm totally not familiar at all. I would love, I'm hopeful to get out there, you know, soon. And, you know, I want to travel all over the place. But for somebody who hasn't been there, you know, or is thinking about, maybe they're thinking about fishing for stripers. Is that something you can just kind of, you know, like you said, grab some gear and your flies and head off over and fish off of the bank somewhere? Or what would you tell somebody that's new to it? Is this a doable fishery to kind of jump into?
Yes, absolutely. It's not difficult to do that. Yes, if you're going, you know, it doesn't matter if you're going on the north side of the island, the south side of the island, there is a lot of private property, so the access is not that easy. But you know, believe me, you do your homework, and there is a plenty of public space that you can go. There is a state park, you know, beach side, you know, again, North Shore, South. And, you know, you'll be able to just to drive and walk in again, and you fish. There is a plenty room, you know, to fish.
Yeah.
And so it's not difficult to do that.
Gotcha.
It's very easy to do.
Gotcha.
What you need is your fly rods, your little bag, with your flies and tippet, your boots, and strongly, you know, I suggest to have like a little basket. And that's it. You're in business.
What little basket? Does it matter? Does it matter what would you recommend if somebody wanted to grab one?
Well, listen, you know, those days when I used to, you know, I was using one of those dishwashing little.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I mean?
Doesn't matter.
I started with that. And then, you know, years later, you know, some company, they manufactured that and made it a little bit more fancier.
Yeah.
Which is not wrong with that. And even these days, there is several company out there that they offer those baskets, but definitely you're going fishing from the shore.
You have to have
you
one.
Know, you get in the water, you're going to need the baskets. So it will make your life much, much
That's
easier.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Okay. And, and so if you take us to the water, so somebody is there, they have their gear, and they're getting ready to cast out there. I mean, what sort of tips would you give somebody if they're new to it and they're trying to find a striper off the bank there?
You really, you know, you need to do a little homework, and obviously you're looking for structures in the water, meaning, you know, some rocks, some boulders, maybe some little streams, you know, getting out into the waters as well. The best thing, you know, today it's much easier to go ahead and, you know, you look in a map and even on your telephone, you can do that. You know, you're looking for jetties. We do have a lot of jetties that are accessible pretty much from anywhere. Again, there is a plenty of state parks, south and north, jetties that are always excellent, you know, and the coves. And, but the best thing, you can do, and my suggestion, and that's, you know, I tell you because from my own experience, the way I used to do it, when I did my homework, let's say I want to go in a brand new area and I don't know what it lays under the water to see where the structures are. Best thing you can do is you go in a dead low tide.
Yeah.
You go to the area where you want to fish. So on a dead low tide, you already know the level of the water when it will be in a high tide. So obviously, if it's a dead low, now you see all the structures you have over there. And that will be the best thing you can do.
Yep.
You go over there, spend some time, and then you wait. You wait until the tide start to coming in again. And then you see the way the tide, you know, works in. And then you will figure out where and the fish might be. And that's your homework. There's nothing better than that you can do.
Okay.
Go on a dead low tide and scout the area.
Gotcha. And on just to keep on that track, so if you're out there, is there tide-wise, is it better to fish it on an incoming tide or does it really matter?
Interesting enough, there is, you know, places that it might be excellent on the incoming tide. There might be other places that will be excellent on outgoing tide. So those are things you need to discover in your own.
Gotcha.
So let's say that you fishing an area on an incoming tide and then no fish coming in or you don't catch anything, that doesn't mean the fish, they might not be there on the outgoing. But, you know, the advantage is that once you know the structures out there on the outgoing, you know how to work the tide on the way out. And then you, of course, you'll see if those fish, they might be there incoming on the outgoing. Most of the time, it depends again on the area. You have the fish coming in with the tide, stays with the tide, and then they will work their way out with the tie as well. So again, it's always a homework.
Yeah, definitely. Where would you direct somebody? Well, I guess first, can you give out, you mentioned a state park or a jetty without giving out any secrets or anything. Is there one place you would recommend, you know, near your area or something that's pretty popular, again, for that new person that just wants to kind of test it out?
Well, you know, on the South Shore is, Jones Beach and the Jones Inlet. There is several parks over there. It's not really a secret.
Yeah.
And, as well on the North Shore, you just go, if you go into the internet and you're looking, you know, in New York State Park on Long Island Sound, North and South, they all listed over there. So it's not really, there is no secret to that. There is, I tell you, there is a several state park. You can easily go in with your car, park, and you go fishing. And and you'll find the place.
That's right. Okay, perfect, perfect. And then what about, if somebody wanted to take it a little bit further? I know, obviously, I heard a little bit. I think maybe you're on your way to slowly moving out. I'm not sure how much you're going to be involved in the industry the next few years to come. But who would you recommend? Is there a good resource, either a person or a website or somebody else you'd recommend to go to learn about the kind of striper fishing and what you do?
Today, pretty much everyone is involved, on striper fishing and blue fishing and so forth and so on. For instance, the local fly shops, they might carry local flies from individual, and they sell it to the local fly shop or tackle shops and things like that.
Who is the local? Can you give a shout out to one of the local fly shops around there? I'm not sure if who those are. Are there quite a few fly shops in the area?
Not really. Unfortunately, there is nothing left, pretty much. The only one I can mention to you is a campsite in Long Island, and then I believe there is a fly shop out in Long Island. It might be a combination of a fly shop and tackle at the same time. Not much left, unfortunately, in Long Island.
And is that mainly just because of the changes in the fishery population, or why is that? Why aren't there more fly shops?
Well, the internet changed everything.
Oh, right.
As you know.
Yeah.
So it's very easy these days. Just you go on your telephone and you order, when you order something online to go fishing, you know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know what you're looking for. And you always get pretty much what you wanted. You know, it's easy. So that's the main reason why. And the fly shop little by little, you see less and less.
Yep. Yeah, I know.
It's unfortunate. But they're not going to disappear. I can tell you that. They're not going to disappear. I mean, in other areas, outside of the Long Island, I see, brand new fly shops. They're just coming in and they're doing good because they diversify themselves. They will have the fly shop, but also they will be strong into the internet. So that's what makes them alive, which is a good thing. You know, I hate to see a fly shop disappearing.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, I hear you. I think I think everybody knows the fly shops are the kind of the soul, right, of fly fishing. I mean, that's the local.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's the local.
And, I strongly suggest to anyone, to support your local fly shop. It's I think it's the right thing to do. Let's put it this way. Don't just go, make it easy in yourself. If you do have a fly shop close by your home, you should go ahead and support that.
And I'm with you. We actually have. I love to give a shout out to the Gorge Fly Shop when I can out in our neck of the woods. We have a local fly shop that's working with us. And if folks want to go to wetflyswing.com/gorge that are in our area, they can support local fly shop and this podcast and the same thing. So there are
Absolutely.
Ways. Yeah, there are ways to do it. You don't have to buy from Amazon necessarily, right? I mean, there's a lot of easy ways to do it. And like shipping is pretty good. I mean, most of these shops could ship, within just pretty close to Amazon. It might not be fully free at every situation, but it's pretty good.
Well, look, we all know that a fly shop, you know, not even my company, you know, can put in the same level as Amazon. You know what I mean? It's impossible.
No.
But, you know, if you can, let's say you want to buy online, you know, my suggestion is very simple. Don't go straight to Amazon, you know. Look for the local fly shop, you know, be supported, even, you know, even online. You don't have, you know, you don't have to have a fly shop, you know, close by you and get in the car. If you don't have that, you know, don't go straight to Amazon. You know, support the fly shop. It's the best thing you can do.
And now let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. What's worse than a day with no bites? A day without coffee, or even worse, a day with bad coffee. Thankfully, that isn't the case for us. With more than 40 years of experience in coffee, the Angler's Coffee team roasts a full range of coffees with one goal in mind, delivering excellent coffee to every single angler. That's why they've released a brand new coffee subscription program made just for you. Just visit anglerscoffee.com, provide your coffee preferences, your mailing address, and how much coffee you drink in a week, and they'll take care of the rest. There's no obligations or hidden fees, just great coffee delivered to your front door. And I've been using and loving Angler's Coffee, and I am a coffee fanatic and have tasted bad coffee for sure. Angler's Coffee is definitely great coffee. I've been enjoying it. It's as good, to be honest with you, it's as good as I've had that I can remember. And that's pretty awesome saying since I drink a lot of coffee. So join me in supporting a great company who supports great coffee, fly fishing, and conservation. As part of Angler's Conservation Alliance, Angler's Coffee donates a portion of every sale to help conserve and protect our wild natural habitats and fish species. Right now, they're raising money for Soul River, which brings veterans and inner city youth out into the river to teach conservation, fishing skills, and more. Right now, you can get 20% off your first subscription box or gift box. Simply use the code WETFLYSWING at checkout. Just visit anglerscoffee.com and get 20% off your first subscription or gift box using WETFLYSWING at checkout. That's anglerscoffee.com.
And you actually had a fly shop, right, a while back. I'm not sure when you closed that down, but can you just describe kind of briefly what that looked like? You know, take us to the old fly shop.
Yeah, absolutely. When I started, you know, fishing for striped, I like a lot. And I said, you know, what the hell? I mean, let me give him a shot over here. But my idea... in my philosophy, the fly shop those days was basically towards fly tying materials than the, you know, the regular fly shop with the fly rods and reels and wetters and things like that. Because I had a passion, of course, to tie the fly. So the fly tying was my passion more than anything else. Yeah, I added some rods and wetters and reels.
Yeah.
But mainly I added, you know, pretty much whatever everyone will need it to tie flies. So let's say, you know, just to give an idea, let's say that I was carrying a bucktail and airline dobbing added, let's assuming 42 colors of bucktail. I used to carry 42 colors of this bucktail. Yeah. Every single color was available. That is how I had that. And same thing on the dobbing, and the same thing on the hackle, and same things on squirrel tail, and so forth and so on. So that was my philosophy, because, you know, when I started, of course, you know, I wasn't really thinking that way. So I had, you know, people coming in and say, well, I need a bucktail, but I need a bucktail on a hot pink.
Yeah.
And I didn't have it. So, well, my question was, why do you need a bucktail hopping? So they start explaining to me why I need this, why I need that. I say, gee, you know what? I guess I'm going to have to get the bucktail and the hopping.
Yep.
And so forth and so on. You build it because as for requests, I say, you know what? I think is a good idea. If there is a 42 colors available on the bucktail, here it is, a wall full of 42 colors, and have the people pick and choose, because sometimes, you know, as you know, I'm sure you do know that, when you're walking into a fly shop, you know, to us, fly ties are like a candy store.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Most of the time, you buy some specific materials. You know, who knows what you see on that color or the application that you want to use it for, but, you know, you see something and you buy. So, and that wasn't my philosophy. So I say, you know what, if I cut it, you know, a bucktail or dobbing or whatever colors are available, that's exactly what I'm going to have.
That's
and that was basically the fly shop I started with it. But, you know, so, and then at some point I give up into that. I had a different ideas. The EP fibers and everything I have in my mind took off. And so I really didn't want to dedicate them myself. You know, dedicating yourself in a fly shop is a big work.
That's right.
It's a big job.
That's right.
I had the different ideas. And the idea pretty much, you know, were where I am today. And believe in me, I you know, there is more to come. I'm not stopping right here.
Oh, good.
There's plenty more to come.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I was wondering about that. I didn't know if you were heading out completely. So, yeah, I know. And I know the fly shop. I grew up in a fly shop as a kid and most of my life. So I appreciate the local. And we had a lot of fly tying materials as well. That was really our focus. So I know how cool it is to go in and just be like, oh man, all this material is amazing. And what year, what was the name of the shop? And then what year was it that you started it and started that thing?
It was 1991.
Okay.
And the name was The Practical Fly Shop.
Oh, cool.
I was a practical those days. I'm still a practical man. You know what I mean? When I do something, I do something for a purpose and be practical. And that's how, you know, all this EP product came out. You know, again, I'm looking more what the fish like and not what the fly fishermen wanted. You know, I'm working the other way around. And, you know, in many cases, it's very difficult to convince the fly fishermen, you know, why this, until they go into the water and they cast the fly and they catch fish, and then they'll understand why. But sometimes it's difficult to explain, you know.
Gotcha. Well, I want to just touch base, you know, again on the materials to make sure we don't miss anything here. So, you know, anything else you want to talk about that, you know, is some of the stuff you've developed over the years that we haven't covered here that might be good for fishing, you know, in saltwater? Or really, I guess you talk about trout as well. Anything else you want to highlight here?
Well, look, the EP fibers pretty much it covers all the fishery out there.
Oh, it does, yeah.
Rather you tie 1-inch flies to 6-7-inch flies. And then, of course, you know, when you get to the bigger fly pattern, you know, for offshore, and then it's a different blending of fibers, you know, a little bit more stiffer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what it really made possible about the EP fiber is that, you know, the fiber themselves, they're very supple, and they, you know, in the water, they just do what the bay fish does, and, you know, and it's a materials that really give it to you what you're looking for when you do tie a pattern. Rather, if it's a bunker type a pattern, which is a wide profile, or a mullet type,
mm-hmm.
which is a thinner profile, or rather if you tie a 1.5-inch little minnow flies. I mean, it's a very versatile, and that's the ability of these materials, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, all the variation now, the different blending that we're doing, and you know, the brushes, this is endless when it comes to the brushes. You know, brushes, we go from salt water to fresh water, including steelhead and salmon. So just to figure out why it is, you know, the range on all the materials that EP has created for all these years, you know, starting when I had the practical fly shop, you know, back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
long time.
Yeah, yeah, that's
right. And of course, you know, those days, of course, you know, it was a battle for me, convincing the people that, you know, you got to look in, you know, with the wide, you know, with a open mind and wide eyes. You know, it's not, you're not limited just on natural materials. You know, the synthetic materials, you know, in many cases will do better than the natural. You know, will serve the purpose for many different patterns.
Yeah.
Better than natural. You know, I'm not saying that the natural material is no longer good or is no good or whatever. I'm not saying that. But, you know, and people these days understood what I understood on the early 90s, pretty much.
Yeah. And the product you have now, I mean, obviously it's evolved over time, but is it, I mean, it's pretty similar to what you first started with when you got going with the brushes, or is it, I mean, is it always constantly changing?
No, bottom line, there is no changing.
Yeah.
Through the year, it has been an evolution, you know, and I always have been improved, you know, the product. But when it comes to the EP fibers, basically it's been the same fibers that when I first started on the early 90s, that hasn't changed at all. I haven't changed anything because after all these years, it's really doing the job and still full those fish out there. So no reason to change whatsoever.
That's right.
I've been doing different blending, yes. New colors, of course. But the big change was when I started with the fibers, with the brushes. I'm sorry. So yeah. The brushes is an evolution. It's adding a little bit of this, a little bit of that, some newer materials, a newer way to do the brush. But base of the EP fibers is still there. Is that? Yeah, I don't think it will ever change.
Okay. Perfect. And when people are using this to tie, if they haven't tied with this before, is it pretty simple? Are you just pretty much just wrapping this thing around the hook and then pulling it back and tying it off? I mean, or is there more to it than that?
No, it's not a complicated tie. I mean, you know, if you go into my website, EP Flies, you will see, I mean, I have a little bit over 100 videos available.
Oh, wow.
People can dig into it. There is a videos with the tips and tricks as well. You know,
perfect.
There is a several videos that show you how to tie dry flies for trout. So the information is out there. And again, I mean, today there is so many talented fly ties out there that they've been going crazy. And then I'm very happy to see that. You know, and see what people can do with the EP product. Basically, you know, I created the tools and I gave the tools to everybody pretty much. And I say, okay, you know, this is the tool. Let me see, you know, show me how you use that. And believe me, I've been seeing quite a few good things out there. I'm very happy to see that.
Nice.
I'm very happy that I contributed to that.
That's
of course.
That's cool. All right. So, yeah, so it's good to hear that you're going to be sticking with it as we move along forward. And obviously you're not, it's not like you're some old person, right? You've been doing this a long time, but you've got a lot of days left in you, right?
Well, you know, look, I have my age, you know, don't get me wrong. And, I would like, let's put it this way. I don't think I will ever retire.
Yeah.
Although my son Daniel took over the company.
Oh, EP cool. Flies,
and he's managing EP Flies, and he's doing great. I mean, he has the passion. So I pretty much dedicated myself, you know, concentrating myself. You know, what else I can put together for. You know, for all the fly ties out there, I mean, I have some ideas. I'm working on something really cool stuff right now, and I would like to go fishing a little bit more. I mean, I think I'm entitled to that, right?
Oh yeah.
So and that's what I'm going to do. It, you know, I will dedicate myself, you know, to make sure that EP product it will be available out there, and we stick it with the quality that I always have been giving to everyone from day one, and we're very proud to say that our quality never changed, always been improved, and that's what people really like about us. You know, we don't deny quality, period. We never did it, never will.
Yeah, that's great. And that's great to hear that Dan's going to still be running things, keeping things going strong over there.
Absolutely.
That's cool. Okay. Well, I feel pretty good about, I got a little bit of background on what you do, a little more than I originally kind of thought about. I guess, you know, as far as we noted a couple of resources, but it's probably your website is probably the best place just to send somebody if they want to learn about tie in with this material or some of the patterns and things like that. It sounds like you have a pretty good resource.
Absolutely. I mean, look, you know, we are dedicated in our website, you know, we are dedicated to give all the information we can. And of course, all the EP products are available, you know, in our site. I don't expect anyone out there to carry 100% of EP product. It will be impossible, that I know. So, and the product you'll see in our website pretty much is the product that we use to tie the flies. And you will find everything 100%. Materials and flies and tools, components, they're all there. So basically we carry the product that we tie the flies.
That's it. Yeah, you got everything. Yep. Everything anybody needs is over there, and they can just go check it out right
yep.
now. And
that's absolutely.
And that's absolutely. let's remind everybody that's just epflies.com.
That's correct.
Yep. All right, perfect. And yeah, I guess just before we take it out of here, I just wanted to note, you know, just kind of on a little bit of more of a general note. So we talked about stripers today a little bit, but as far as you, when you choose, if you just say, you know, one species you have to fish for the rest of time, what are you going for?
That would be tarpon.
Tarpon.
Yep.
Yeah.
I can't really keep on going for tarpon because I don't know what it is about those fish. To me, is a magical. You go fishing for those fish, and I feel like there is a relation between me and those fish. Rather if they are a juvenile tarpon up to 200-pound tarpon.
Yeah.
There is that relation. There is that feeling, and there is that respect on both sides, you know. And everybody should do that. Not only with tarpon, but with any fish out there. You go fishing and be respectful. Because if we do that, you know, we will have all those fishery from yep. generation to come. And to me, that is, it's a really, really important. And, you know, it's very, very joyful to go fishing out there and catch 1-2 fish a day, and you will remember for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
and that's what I have to say about. Perfect. But to me, that tarpon is just, you know, is a magical fish to go fishing for.
Yeah, yeah, that's. It seems like tarpon's the one of the species, definitely. That well, probably the. If I had to say, most people, a majority of people that answer that question, I think tarpon is high on the list. So, okay. And one, Enrico, one random one before we get out here. I always love when I have time to ask this one about music. I'm not sure if you listen to music, if you have a favorite type of music or band or anything like that. Anything you want to throw out there?
Well, my favorite music, believe it or not, is a classic. I like opera. One of my favorite is Mozart.
Oh yeah.
You know, one of the modern or recent band that I follow the most, believe it or not, is Queens.
Oh, is who now?
Queens.
Oh, okay. All right, perfect.
Yeah, the band.
Oh yeah.
All them. I mean, of course, he's an oldie like me, but that's pretty much just my music. In fact, when I sit down and a tight bunch of flies and or new flies or whatever, just, you know, close the door and I have my glass of red wine and light them up a cigar. And I have my muzzle to keep me company and...
That's it.
There you go.
That's it. You had the cigar. So what are the what's your cigar of choice if you had to go for one right now?
Well, when I can grab it, when I can get it is my cigar of choice is Upman. It's a Cuban cigar, but they're not easy to find them yet. But you know, when I go traveling out there and I'll be able to grab a box here and there, that's my choice.
Well, how do you spell that?
Hopman.
Oh, Hopman,
H-U-P-A-N-T, Hopman.
H-U-P-A-N-T. Okay, Hop. Yeah. Okay, perfect. All right. Well, I guess that's all I have for you, Enrico. This has been a lot of fun. Do you want to give a shout out in the next 6 months to a year? Anything new you got coming? You want to, you know, with you or yourself personally or the business?
Let's say that I'm working on a new purpose that probably would change the way people think about purpose.
Cool.
You know, top water is always a good fishing. It's always exciting, and I'm working on this purpose that probably will be released on the next couple of months, and I believe it's going to change the way you know, purpose been fished for forever. They will be extremely easy to cast, and you know, any average caster, you know, including me, be able to handle this purpose and do very well.
Nice. That's exciting. Okay, so I'll put a link out to epflies.com, and I think obviously this episode is going to live out there for a long time, so maybe people right now can head over there and just take a look at what you have. Okay.
Excellent.
All right, perfect. Yeah, Enrico, hey, thanks for all the time today. I appreciate everything you've done, you know, for fly fishing and saltwater and just taking the time to share your wisdom. It's been very helpful, and we'll hope to keep in touch with you.
Well, I'm happy to, you know, to be here available to anyone, of course, and any question anyone might have, it easy to find me, you know, just, you know, send me an email and get in touch with Daniel, and any way we can help anyone with any questions. I always done that, and yes, you know, it's good to talking with people, exchange information. I am the type of a person, I'm always open to any suggestion, and why not, you know, you know, in life, the good thing is when we understand the principle of sharing, you know, you have something and you share it with everybody. That's the best thing you can ever do.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Be well.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes with all the links we covered, just go to wetflyswing.com/210. Again, if you can, please subscribe and you'll get updated when the next episode drops. We've got some good stuff going on here coming up this next couple weeks and beyond. So that's the best way to stay in touch. Also, we've been shouting out to the member society. We've got a lot of great stuff going on there. Hope you enjoyed today's episode and looking forward to catching up with you soon. Hope to maybe see you online or maybe on the river.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.